FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 12/14/16. Think of that what you will. And it is said the United States is the land of second chances. Everyone seems, well, second, third, fourth chances for some, myself included. Well, if you haven't read the book Second Chance, that's because it's getting released shortly and you'll definitely want to. The author is on with us now, David Morgan. David, welcome back.
Kerry, thanks for having me back, and thanks for the introduction on Second Chance. And it's the subtitle that really makes it important for your listeners, and that is how to make and keep big money from the coming gold and silver shockwave. It's co-authored. It's myself and David Smith. We spent a lot of time on this book, and it's got a lot of things in there, but primarily lessons learned from the first bull market that David and I both experienced. He and I both had leveraged positions as well as stock positions and physical metal positions during the last move up into January 21st, 1980. So we've learned a lot between 1980 and 2016. The book actually is out now, and if you want to look at it, you can go to a URL. First of all, you can go to Amazon and type in, probably the best thing to do is type in David Morgan's Second Chance or David Smith's Second Chance. There's a lot of books that are titled Second Chance. The other way is a URL that's called The Book. So it's THEBOOK, secondchance.com, the book, secondchance.com. That'll bring you to a landing page that we set up so you can purchase the paperback, the hardback, or the Kindle version.
So Second Chance, you know, I've made huge money in the market and I've lost huge money. Not in the mining stocks. I did get out in time in 2011, 2012. It had a stupendous rally. I sold out just in time. And not because I was so brilliant. I needed the money. The dot-com boom, I mean, I was just making so much ridiculous money. I'd look at my portfolio every day, and it was just, I couldn't earn that much money in a real job. And then it started going south, and rather than get out, I just watched the value of my portfolio dissipate. And there's a lesson in that, isn't there?
Exactly. In fact, we addressed that exact same scenario in this book on how to keep it, how to, you know, make and keep big money. And keep is the key phrase. Many people do that. And, you know, talking about this bull market in 2016, you know, I've said often, and I'll say it again because it bears repeating, that, you know, bull markets function is to shake off as many people as it possibly can on the way up, making new highs. And I really believe that the bottom is in, unlike, you know, Martin Armstrong and some others. I think the bottom was in the end of last year, about a year ago. And we've been up several, you know, months of the beginning of 2016 to like July or so. And I called the top there and got all of the Morgan Report members out. You know, on my call. In other words, you know, I trade 25%. People do whatever they want to do. I mean, they want to go in out with everything they've got. Good luck. But, you know, I'm pretty good at timing the market. So the point I'm making is I got a lot of flack even from my own people. Oh, man, blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know what? I'm calling it as I see it. We're selling into strength. And a lot of those, you know, that weren't so on board watched it come down from that point within about 2 weeks. It's about 2 weeks early, which trading commodities for most of my life, I learned the hard way, Kerry, as you well know, you've got to sell into strength. You've got to sell when a lot of people want to keep buying. Once the top is in, good luck selling, because now everybody wants to sell. There's nobody that's going to buy it from you. And that's what happens in the futures markets all the time. So anyway, I just wanted to let your listeners know that part of the premium service is timing service. And I position trade. I'm pretty darn good at it, but I'm not perfect. That's why we always keep a core position. And it's one of those things where I kept a trade on from basically the beginning of the year all the way through until like into the July or so timeframe. So that's a several months hold. And a lot of those, you know, was like silver going from 5 to 50 again. It was those kind of percentage moves in many of the stocks we cover in the Morgan Report. Yet, you know, in fact, I'm thinking of writing an article. Did you miss the 2016 move to $50 silver? ? I'll get a lot of, you know, reads because people go, what the heck is David talking about? What I'm talking about is the leverage you get in the paper side of silver, the top tier unhedged mining companies. And they have done that kind of performance percentage wise, where silver had a nice move on a percentage basis, you know, from the 14 level, if you can believe it, Carrie, it's hard for me to even get that word out, 14, but from 14 up to almost 20.
Yeah.
Is a heck of a move. You're looking at $6 on a $14 base. So that's a big percentage. But some of these stocks did far, far better percentage wise, up and down. I'm always try to be objective. You know, they go higher up and higher down. In other words, percentage moves are greater on the way up and they are greater on the way down. So anyway, having said all that, Carrie, I'm flipping it back to you. It's great to be on your show again. It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, I remember we talked on September 12th of this year. And you pretty much said, hey, it's made its intermediate high, time to take your profits. And it was a very prescient call, because if you didn't take your profits, like stocks like First Mining, so many others out there, they had major retracements. And you didn't lose all your profits by any stretch, but you lost a substantial portion. And now guys like Martin Armstrong, who I have a lot of respect for, he's a personal friend. Now they're saying, you know, gold's going to break 1,000. And personally, I don't believe it. I believe that the bull market is going to resume come the after the first of the year sometime. There's a guy I follow who is just so uncannily on the money with this stuff, a guy by the name of Eric Haddock.
Yeah, I have known Eric for years. Eric and I go back at least 30 years. Yeah.
He's just been so on the money with this market. And, you know, sometime in 2017, something's going to happen. People are going to wake up and this thing's going to take off again. I feel totally confident in that. And just like I feel watching this thing kind of hit the skids in the past month and a half, watching the price of gold and silver do a bit of a retracement, you know, expected. I mean, it was called, it was called by you, called by him and others. So I'm not overly concerned about it, but certain parties are panicking about it. The Trump rally, I call it Trumpphoria, you know. What I say is all that glitters is not Trump. You know?
Yeah.
It's really that simple. Nothing has changed. Yeah, some companies are saying, oh yeah, we're gonna hire IBM, we're gonna hire 25,000 workers. Well, let me see this happen. You know, I want to see it happen. Up until 6 months ago, they've been shedding employees like lizards shed skin, you know? And all of a sudden they're gonna start hiring. I wanna see it. Do you believe it? I'm not convinced.
Yeah, so. I'm with you. I'm very neutral on the political scene. I really don't think there's much that anyone at the presidential level can really do. I think there'll be kind of the euphoria you mentioned, but I think the reality is that the debt bomb is so big, so vast, and so pervasive that you can't get out of it, regardless of who's steering the ship. I use the Titanic metaphor too many times, but that's what I think. You change the captain on the Titanic. I won't say more. I've said it on many other interviews.
Yeah. I know. I follow you quite closely. Yeah, it's bigger than any one person. I mean, right? I mean, that's what it really comes down to. And, you know, there's no end to it. Nobody has said, let's not issue debt. Maybe it's not a good idea. Let's not print money. Let's not borrow. You know, no change has been made to the way we do business in the United States and the world, for that matter. It's only getting worse here. And then what are your thoughts about the breakup of Europe here, David? I know you've been following it closely.
Well, pretty close. I think it was inevitable. I think the euro was an experiment that was badly thought out, because there is no, you know, United Republic of Euro that can sell their own sovereign bond as a united entity. They're all individual countries. And so the debt situation got unmanageable. and now, you know, they're printing money at different rates. I mean, well, the euros, they're going into debt at different rates. Let me rephrase that. So they're taking on debt at different rates versus their nation state, but yet it's all tied to one currency, which means the currency is got multiple personality disorder. It doesn't know which country to adhere to as far as what its asset liabilities are. So that poses this huge problem, which again is inevitable. So the breakup isn't a big shock, but how it breaks up is to be determined. This Brexit thing that I was in favor of, I'm going to digress a bit, Carrie, you might have to reel me back in, but you know, this tolerance and diversity. Well, tolerance and diversity, let's tolerate other nation states with their own cultures, and let's have the diversity. Let's have the Greeks be Greeks and the Italians be Italians and the Spanish be Spanish. Hey, what's wrong with that? Why do we all have to be in this Eurozone? Why can't they just be their own nation state? How about some diversity? How about some tolerance for different cultures? I mean, am I giving the left their own argument? I think I am, and I think that's the way it should be. I think, you know, you should have your own culture. When everything gets diluted into this big mass of jello and there's no real, tradition or culture, what have you got? You got a big blob of nothing.
Yeah. At one time I thought globalism was a great idea. One world, everybody's going to play nicely. But then, you know, when you see the fallout from it, it just doesn't work. I mean, until we all speak one language and we all, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's just been a failure, especially for the U.S. as being the big proponent of it. And maybe it works nicely for Wall Street and London and all the financial districts of the world, but it sure does work horribly for Main Street, and we all wind up getting screwed on the deal, seems to me.
Yeah, I agree. It's better. I mean, you know, I don't want to go too far on this path, but isn't it a richer life when you get to go to an Italian restaurant and a Mexican restaurant and, you know, rather than all of a sudden we're in this, you know, one world restaurant situation where, and you know, I mean, that's a metaphor. I know it's not reality, but I'm trying to get people to think. It's really nice to have these different cultural ideas and basis and learn from each other and trade with each other instead of shoot at each other. Mm-hmm. But this, you know, everybody's the same, everybody's equal, we're all one world. It's not working. And in fact, it looks like myself and others really think that we're going to go the other direction, which sounds preposterous at this time because most people believe that the power structure is so powerful, but it's going to go back into smaller communities, not bigger. In other words, the centralization is actually not working. And we're seeing that with the Brexit in Italy and all that's going on in the Eurozone.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's been an unmitigated disaster. There's no putting the toothpaste back in this tube. Hey, for the coming year, for 2017, what trends are you seeing that are really going to make a difference here in your life and everyone's life here?
Well, the big one, I think, is robotics. More and more companies are using, you know, robots at whatever level. They don't have a union. They don't need a coffee break. They don't require health insurance. This is the future, which means more, skilled labor will be displaced, which is unfortunate, but that's the new reality. Even in the fast food environment, you'll see more and more of the kiosk kind of a situation where you'll see, a little machine that you walk up to and put your order in, and there'll be, you know, robots will actually be preparing the food. There'll be a human or two there kind of as the store manager and kind of the smiley face to, you know, greet you and, you know, wish you well. But that's the trend. So that's a major trend that you'll see over the next, you know, decade or so. Another trend in the United States will be, I think, it'll be the Trump euphoria, which means that the government, instead of doing this monetary policy, which is how they fiddle with the money supply, fiscal policy is where the government actually puts money directly into the back pockets of the citizenry, either directly with a government job or more precisely this public-private partnership where the government hires different entities on a bidding process, usually to fix the roads, fix the schools, build bridges, expand rivers, make new dams, on and on, whatever. And this will be a stimulus that at least you'll get something out of it rather than, another screenshot of Janet Yellen. And I'm not against, fixing our infrastructure. What I'm against is it doesn't provide new real wealth that could help pay down the deficit. What it will do is put some people back to work. And I think it will give a renewed feeling of, let's make America great. I think there will be enough implementation of the objectives, and this is all predicated on, it's election going all the way through. I am not looking at a conspiracy theory behind every tree. I don't see a conspiracy theory behind every tree. I see a conspiracy theory behind about every third tree.
So you're better than me. I see it around every second tree.
So I think that, with this chatter that's going on as we're speaking on the Electoral College and all the resistance that's come from the anti-Trump, no Trump, that campaign. I don't know if it's legit or not. I'm going to stay open-minded, but I don't rule it out. So I just wanted to throw that in there, Kerry.
Yeah, well, I don't think anything is going to stop Trump from becoming president. I believe that this is just nonsense. I think if they even consider it, there will be a revolution because it will be subversion of the Constitution, the worst subversion that we've ever seen. You could argue perhaps that the election of 2000 was a subversion, but it was done within the context of the Supreme Court. They were battling, it should have gone to the House of Representatives to decide that is what should have happened. It should have, because it basically was a tie election in Florida. But Florida has learned its lesson. We're not going to have hanging chads in Florida anymore. But no, those electors are not going to reject their oath because the consequences just going to break up the country. I mean, it would be insane. So I just don't see that as a possibility. But on the other hand, like you say, conspiracy theories, they're running rampant and they're not theories. We should be specific on that because you're pretty precise scientific. They're hypotheses, right? A theory is something that that is explains what's happening, but hasn't been fully conclusively proven. A hypothesis is speculative, a speculative explanation that that isn't conclusively determined, So it's a hypothesis, right? We need to be clear on that. So the odds of Trump not becoming president are less than 0.1%, but never say never, because, the elite said that he wasn't going to become the president. And look, here we are, right?
That's right. Exactly.
So never say never, but highly unlikely. And trends for the coming year. So social unrest, we've had quite a bit of it throughout Obama's term. And I believe it was at least tacitly or underhandedly encouraged. You think we're going to see more of it?
Yeah, I think that trend is on the upswing, at least for a while, and it's going to take a real statesman and leadership to kind of calm the nation. I mean, the pulpit really has the ability, if your rhetoric is good and you're sincere, I think people can feel it, to heal the nation. And we certainly need that. We need to come together and look at what's in the best interest of the common good. And of course, there's such a divide. And I agree with you. I think part of it's been orchestrated to make this left-right paradigm or whatever. And this is a typical way that the power elite orchestrate the system. They get, two sides to oppose each other. The old, often as it's used, divide and conquer. It's a much easier scenario for the enemy to come in to divide and conquer. When you're united, you have a much stronger base. And, it's going to take some time. I think it will come back. I think the necessities, once that the economy resets, however that takes place, the general populace will see a lot of, each other and a lot of this periphery stuff, which is so important today. I mean, so important, will become so much less important when there's, real problems to face. And I think that's when the majority will actually come together, and there will be a minority that will probably freak out and cause more problems. But I'm still a believer that most people are basically good. We're all flawed. We're human beings, but I really think deep down most are good. I mean, there's been studies on this, and I'm not a social, I don't study social context very much at all. I do from the market standpoint, but I don't want to talk about that. So I think we're going to see that trend continue for a while. But I also think that within this next few years, it will start to die off and we'll become more united.
Yeah, I think stirring people up and playing them off against one another isn't a long-term prescription for success. And it isn't really a healthy way to rule a country, and it won't be effective in the long run. It just really doesn't accomplish anything, and it doesn't solve problems, which is what governing is supposed to be all about, is, I always use this quote, the art of the possible, right? That's what politics is supposed to be about. And really, it just becomes the art of victimization, and it becomes the just grievance, settling grievances. And, that's not what the system is for. Grievance settlement is a valid part, but that's supposed to be for the courts and the legislature to work on, but not for the whole political system to be settling scores. And that's what it's devolved into. And it's really kind of distressing, because that's not what the founding fathers created the system for. But ignorance is a very expensive and plentiful commodity in the modern world today. And a lot of it is because, we don't study history enough in our schools to learn the lessons that people have died to learn,
So exactly. Yep.
So hopefully we don't have to fight wars to learn the lessons that were learned at a very high cost before. Well, I don't mean to wax philosophically here. Anyway, David, just tell us the Morgan Report, how we can get it, and again, where we get your book, Second Chance.
All right. The best thing is just go to the website, themorganreport.com. Be sure to get on our free email list. We just had some really great news on one of the speculations, and this morning. I'll read part of it, but it's a spin out from a company that we hold in the speculative file. So I'll call it: this company is pleased to announce that the board of directors of blank company have unanimously approved the proposal to spin out its reagent technology to ET, I'll call it, a new corp formed to continue the research and development of leach technologies. A spin-out will include a transfer of all related assets, including intellectual property rights, to the eco-friendly, blah, blah, non-cyanide-based formula to ET for the price of $3 million. So it's a nice gift for everybody that's a member of the Morgan Report. If they hold this speculation, they're going to get a nice gift. And I guess that's all I'll say. I'd like to say a lot more, but let's leave it at that. So if you're thinking of starting your new year off financially strong, consider a subscription to the Morgan Report.
Absolutely. And thank you for that, David. We know that hidden in the pages of the Morgan Report, there are little Easter eggs and Christmas presents wrapped up in a nice little package just like that. So it's a good reason to subscribe if you're thinking about it, or giving it as a gift, perhaps. We don't really talk about giving these publications as gifts, but hey, somebody who's starting out in investing, it's an excellent idea. And so themorganreport.com. David, we will talk to you again real soon. Be well, my friend. Happy holidays.
Well, happy holidays to all your listeners, and a very happy, prosperous, and fit new year. Thank you, Kerry.
Yep. Hey, you too.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.